Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside Devious Podcast for September the 25th, 2020. This is episode number 25. Today, we'll be talking about Tesla's Battery Day, plus the Plaid Model S, the official launch of the VW ID4, and California looks like it's going to ban internal combustion cars. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's editor and Inside EV's forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, longtime and multiple EV owner and Inside EV's editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together the super awesome videos for the new Inside EV's YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. See, what do we have charged up in our driveways today? Kyle, I understand you have the e-tron.
Right. So I have a Audi e-tron in the driveway right now. That's not mine. That is my friend Nick's. Audi didn't have any in the press fleet. So we had a viewer of the channel of Inside EVs and Out of Spec reach out, say, hey, borrow my e-tron. And so I have it for about 2 weeks. And what else do I have? I have a Zero SRS in the garage. And right. Yesterday, I had another e-tron and an Energica to compare to the Zero. So lots of EVs flying around, lots of videos making tons of drag races, but it's been tons of fun.
Motorcycles, I love it. And you also did like a 70 mile an hour test this week with the e-tron?
Right, that was crazy impressive, actually. I did the 70 miles per hour test in arguably the worst e-tron for it, because it's the max trim with the big heavy massaging seats and double pane glass. And it had, the 21 inch giant wheels on it. And it still got within, Tom, I believe it was 7% of its EPA.
Yeah, you hit 188 and the EPA is 204. So I think that's 93% of the EPA rated range. Good job.
Yeah, it's crazy impressive. Actually, I would say it did better than I thought it was going to do. And 188 miles in the e-tron. It was a very comfortable range test. Most comfortable range test to date.
And it's EPA rated for 205 miles. Is that right?
Yeah, 204. Yep.
204. Okay. Yeah. So that was not too bad. Hey, Tom, do you have anything this week?
I have not had anything this week. I will be doing a charging 0 to 80% charging on a BMW i3 tomorrow. So I'll have that on the show next week. Just want to comment quickly on Kyle's great job with the e-tron range test. One of the things that is notable is that while the car performed better than I thought it would, I was guessing like 170, 175, actually did better than what I thought it was. That had a 2.3 mile per kilowatt hour consumption rate, which is by far the worst we've ever seen on our 70 mile range test. Now, that's fine. It's a big, heavy SUV. It's for comfort and luxury, but it is important to note that Audi did a great job with the e-tron, but it is one thirsty electric vehicle. And it doesn't really, I don't think customers really mind that they're paying more for, say, to drive that 100 miles than they would a Tesla or another electric vehicle. But the problem is it's got this huge battery pack, 95 kilowatt hours, and it doesn't even go 200 miles on the highway. That's the problem with the consumption, not that, oh, I'm spending more money on electricity. So, overall, I love the e-tron, but Audi's got to figure out a way of getting that more efficient so that they can squeeze more miles out of the battery pack.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how long they actually use that platform for electric vehicles now that they have the MEB platform up and running and products coming up on with that platform. Okay, Kyle, you also had the Tesla Model Y performance this week, didn't you? You did a one lap.
Yeah, that was actually last week. But yeah, we had it set live this week. Okay. A Model Y performance that was stock did very well. In the coming weeks, we have the off-roading overlanding Model Y that I did a one lap in, which is a lift kit on off-road tires being, you know, skidded around the racetrack. It's really funny. But coming up on Monday, Dominic, I think it is Monday, I sent it to you. It is a Model 3 Standard Plus for one lap of the track. So lots of EVs coming up. Of course, e-tron, Nissan Leaf, whole bunch of stuff that I've been testing. It's all been skidded around the track for one lap.
Right on. All right, so let's dive into this. It was a pretty big week all around. Of course, the big news is Tesla's Battery Day extravaganza. So finally, Tesla had its big battery day. There was quite a bit of great sounding news to come out of it, but there was also some, there's still some disappointment. There was no announcement about new tech already being put into existing vehicles, and the main consumer product announcement, the Model S Plaid, is still a year away when many thought it might be in production now or extremely soon. Basically, though, what we learned is that the Plaid Model S can be reserved now, and they intend to add a smaller $25,000 model in a few years. But the big thing, of course, had to do with battery days, or had to do with batteries, hence battery day. Essentially, they laid out a path to increasing a 54 increase to increasing range about 54%, and also seeing a $56 per kilowatt hour decrease. So Elon recently spoke about achieving a 400 watt hour per kilogram mark in cell energy density in a few years, and that was reiterated. So that does seem like a medium-term target. To achieve longer-term goals like the 3 terawatt hours of cell production by 2030, they've basically rethought the entire cell process from dirt to driving. I mean, everything is addressed from the source of the lithium, the cell architecture, and the process to manufacture it to the factories. And speaking of 2030 vehicle production wise, I think it's important to note that they're aiming for like 20 million cars or so by the year 2030. So that's kind of nuts. But we'll talk about the cars in a bit. But first, Tom, what struck you as the most interesting or important thing about these new 4680 tablet cells that they're coming out with?
Okay, so we talked about this last week, trying to figure out what was going to be revealed, and you asked that same question: what are you most excited about? And I'm going to be consistent with that. What I was really looking to hear, and we found out, was are these tabless cells, which would save a ton of money and make them more efficient? They are. Were they going to be cell to pack structure rather than inside modules? They are. The cells are actually, we learned, going to be a structural part of the vehicle, which is pretty amazing. Now, there's positives, there's negatives to that. Now, the fact that these new cells are going to be 5 times more energy dense, they're going to increase range by 16%, 6 times more power, and 14% less money, dollars per kilowatt hour. That is enormous. They cost less to manufacture. They'll be able to streamline the production facility. I mean, this is all, it has rippling effects across everything Tesla does, and that's amazing. One of the things that is a little concerning is, since these are actually structural and part of the structure of the vehicle, it sounds like the battery pack won't be replaceable. You know, that could be some, I don't know how Tesla's going to deal with that. Will they just give you a new car if, you know, there's a problem with the battery a year into ownership? That's a little unclear, but the fact, everything else about it is fantastic. Now, it's not the first time that manufacturers have claimed the battery pack is an integral part of the structure of the vehicle. Many of the manufacturers now with these skateboard designs are designing the battery pack to be an integral part of the structure, but they're removable still. It appears as though what Tesla's doing is this thing is, you know, is built into the vehicle. It's the rigidity of the vehicle depends on it, and it won't come out. That's at least my take on it. I could have misinterpreted that, and that's a question that I have. But overall, the big story for me, it wasn't that they're, you know, experimenting with silicon and you know, going to be that there's enough lithium in the Nevada deserts to electrify the whole U.S. fleet. These cells, that's what it comes down to. And I just love that Tesla is just, you know, all the other OEMs are kind of saying, hey, Cadel and LG Chem, what do you got for me? Samsung SDI, what's the best we could put in our car in 4 years? And Tesla's just like, hold my beer. Like, great, we need to work with you guys, but we're not waiting for you to make these breakthroughs. We're going to do them. And I mean, this is no small story. This is really something that they're coming out with something like this that appears to be so much better than what other manufacturers are going to have. And this is here. We're talking, you know, they're already making these cells. Now, they're not going to be able to make them in volume for a couple of years, but this isn't, oh, look what we'll have by 2026. No, they're making them now. This is big news.
Well, they're going to have to put these in. Well, the Cybertruck comes out next year, right? And this is going to be in the Cybertruck. And I guess the Model S Plaid. I was going to talk about the cars a little bit later, but yeah.
I suppose it would have to be in the Plaid if they're going to get that kind of range and performance. But that's going to require really a totally redesign, because these won't fit in the Model S's existing battery pack. It's not tall enough. So
that's right. Are they going to redesign the pack? Or like you said, because like the new vehicles coming up, they're going to do that one piece body structure. The casting, they've developed a new alloy just so they could make these huge castings. So the whole front of the vehicle is like a single casting, and the whole rear of the vehicle, which they're doing now. Oops, my hands are huge. Which they're doing now in China.
You know what that means.
I like the audio listeners to the podcast version are going like, whoa, where did that come from? But if you have to be watching the YouTube video, you don't understand right. that.
So these two huge castings are going to be, you know, connected together by the middle piece, which is essentially the battery, which is, you know, all the cells glued into place between these two plates. And it's like, so there's like three pieces to the main structure of the car. And like you said, I don't know if is a battery even removable. I don't see how it could be. And then again, and so we have this Plaid Model S coming out next year. I'm not convinced it has the new cells, but the Cybertruck does have to have the new cells. There's no way has to have this new, what we call this, sell the pack or sell the vehicle.
Yeah.
Sells the car. C2C technology.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But how do they then get? I know Tesla probably just threw out that number, 520 miles of range without the new cells. How do they achieve that?
No, they can't. They can't. Not without putting more cells in and making the car.
Well, even the original cells, what are the 2650s? They've improved over time, so maybe they can put 125 kilowatt hours in of those cells. I don't know.
Well, look at Lucid Air. They're not using any of these fancy dancy right. cells, and they're getting 517 miles of range. Right. And I swear that Tesla just put 520 to be three better than Lucid. They don't know how they're going to get there. There was no conversation. Elon just said, make the presentation better, and we'll figure it out next year.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But yeah, could they do it without putting in the new cells? I'm not so sure. I think that's why they delayed it. Because if you remember, Elon said that the Plaid was going to be, initially it was this summer. Then he backed off and said it'll be the end of the year. Then they revised it and said it'll be fall. And so I think everyone was really surprised to have that model put back by a year. Of course, the pill was slightly sugared by, but you can pre-order one now if you want to. So they did have some positive news, but I don't know. But then again, if you try and join those dots up, but then listening to what he said, which is the pilot plant will be in 1 year's time 10 gigawatt hours, which, I mean, isn't that crazy? Like, that is a pilot plant, which is in theory not to scale. Well, it's not scaling, but it's 10 gigawatt hours, which makes it already one of the biggest gigafactories in the world. So maybe they will have, maybe when they say the pilot line will be in a year's time ready, maybe what he was talking about was the yield at 10 gigawatt hours, because they can't all be, you can't make 10 gigawatt hours of test cells. You can't then make them and then recycle them and make them and recycle them. So they will be doing something with them, and hopefully they'll be thinking, well, we're going to have enough of them to make a small run of very expensive Model S's. And will they be in any of the other cars? Now, I doubt it. It must just be that car only.
Yeah, well, they're making them now. So, you know, I think they probably have a huge, very high scrap rate right now. So they have, there's still some problems to work out, but I think they're making, they're in production now. So the good sales that they can actually produce now will, I guess, be saved up for test vehicles and mules and things. And it hopefully, as production scales up, even at the pilot plant, they'll have enough supply to begin making this Cybertruck, because that's, you know, they need, as soon as that Texas factory gets up, they need to start, you know, churning out the metal.
But this simply going to the 4680 form factor and this tabless design and this larger jelly roll, as they call it, that's a 16% increase in range on its own without anything else. And so even if they took today's technology, which we know they're not, but like today's anode and cathode material and integrated it into the vehicle the way they are currently by just bolting it up underneath the Model S, because the Model S is still technically swappable the way the car was designed. And so that would be a 16% range increase already, which is sizable. But as you say, then you go into this all of that, those five steps, then you would think, well, that's the only way that they can achieve that 520 miles. But the performance of it as well. So yeah, all those questions have been running through my mind, like the video they released of the Laguna Seca lap. Was that using the first batch of these cells in the car that we didn't see? The good, you know, some of the good batches, all of those questions running through my mind, thinking like, how far advanced are they? Was this, you know, Elon got this reputation of being on Elon time, of always over promising and under delivering. And then with the Model Y, he flipped it on its head, and that the Model Y came so much quicker than anybody thought. And so I've been sitting since battery day with this thought of, you know what, maybe he's under promising with this. Because there was too many times in that presentation where he was like, yeah, but it's not really working right at the moment. And maybe it's 3 to 5 years away. And I just don't know whether he wants to not really tip off the competition of how far along they are.
Yeah, I feel like they've left a lot of questions unanswered during this whole presentation. And it's a great presentation. If you haven't seen it, definitely go track it down on YouTube. It's up on the Inside EV's website. And it's just amazing that where they, you know, go over all the different components of the cells, you know, all the anodes, the cathodes, and the materials inside them, and how they're, you know, like they want to do a silicone anode instead of graphite. So that the problem traditionally with silicon in an anode is that when the lithium ions travel through it into it, that's, you know, what happens to intercalculate with the anode. It swells up, all these ions go into the anode and it swells like four times, and you know, then they leave and then it shrinks and that breaks down over time. So what they want to do is like the silicone anode have an elastic ion conducting polymer coating, which is integrated into the electrode with a highly elastic binder and electrode design. So that basically they're designing the electrode to just go with the flow of the swelling of the silicon. And, you know, the, I don't know. It's,
That was the biggest chunk of the range increase. So when they were talking about the range, the 54% range increase, which is just, it's stunning. Hang on a minute.
Right.
54%. The biggest chunk of that, the biggest of the five things they were going through, was the new anode design. So again, like you say, how much of this technology can be woven into existing cell production? Because of course the form, like when we talk about form factor of the cells, the two different sizes, the 18650s and the 2170s, simply refers to the size of the packaging of the shell casing. And so the chemistry in that has changed a lot over the years. And I was guilty sometimes of thinking, oh, well, they haven't, you know, I was calling it the 18650 and the Model S and the Model X. And by implication saying, those batteries haven't got better since they launched the cars. And of course, Tesla point out, no, along with Panasonic, we have improved the chemistry and the design of those cells incredibly over the course of those cars. And so even with this anode technology, that was a 20%. That was 20% of the 54%. So even on its own, you're going to get yourself a chunk of miles.
Right. Yeah, I found it very interesting. And the cathode as well, that want to do like a high nickel cathode, but not just, they want to do like a nickel only or no cobalt for like high energy uses like the Semi and Cybertruck, which, you know, there's a Cybertruck again. So it needs, the Cybertruck is going to need that, you know, high nickel content battery. But to avoid like running into nickel shortages, because there's only so much nickel around, they're also pursuing, you know, iron for some markets and some vehicles, and also a nickel manganese chemistry for like I guess the Tesla Model S and 3 and Y, and saving just the pure nickel cathodes for the you know distance real where it's really really important, like the Semi and Cybertruck. So go ahead.
Where do you guys? I've tried to find this in the last couple of days, but they didn't specifically address charge speed. That there wasn't a headline slide that said, "And your car will charge in 5 minutes." And they purposefully kept that away from us. But I've looked into this and I can't find a kind of a definitive answer. Do you guys have any insights into what these changes mean? Because the heat dissipation is meant to be the big thing with using the form factor, the technology changes, the way they get a package, the integration into the car, all of those things are meant to sort out a lot of the thermal issues. And people have kind of said to me, well, that means they'll charge a lot faster.
Right. Well, closer to the beginning of the presentation, they had a big graph in the background. And you can see this big line going up. And he was talking about the form factor. The problem with the form factor being so large is that this is a heat dissipation. But then you saw that line, but you know, fall down, and he says, "Well, but we've conquered that basically, you know." So it looks like they've got around the cell design with the plate on the bottom, plate on the top, you know, dissipates heat quite well because the electricity is not flowing through a very small part of the cell. There's a lot more connections in there. Anyway, it should be.
I think the headline that we didn't get was, which, and it potentially is, and your cars will charge, or it'll hang on to that peak rate a lot more. That just wasn't overtly said, and so I wonder how much of a big deal is this. And I think it could be quite a big deal in terms of allowing smaller packs to charge at the faster rates.
Well, I remember seeing a comment somewhere that someone had calculated that they could get. They could increase charging speed up to a megawatt or something, which is what the Semi truck needs. But I don't know if that applies to like the Cybertruck or, you know, I really wish they had have said something about charging speed. Kyle, did you hear anything about that?
No, there was nothing said about charging speed. And really, I think that was my biggest disappointment. Everything was great. Cool that they have a roadmap. There's nothing tangible for normal people out of this entire presentation. You know, we did the live stream. We had 54,000 people watch with us on the live stream. It was amazing. And those that were there can recall, I read a text from my dad in real time, who's been on Wall Street forever. And he said, look, no one will understand this. The market's going to go down. And it did. And that's the problem. Nothing's flashy. Even like, just give us something that maybe owners can understand, which is, you know, you'll see 350 kilowatt charging. I don't know. Just throw out some number to make us have something to talk about. But yeah, it was just such a geek fest and nothing today. Even the Plaid's a year away. And look, it's battery day to be expected. However, I would say they did a poor job, especially Elon on Twitter, not that this is his job, managing expectations. I was expecting to see Model S refresh. We were hoping to see the Cybertruck come crashing on the stage with flames everywhere. And there was nothing like this. The only thing we got to do was drink every time they honked the horns on all those silly Model Ys sitting in the parking lot. And so that made the presentation bearable.
But we didn't even see the cars on the presentation. So it wasn't until it was over and we finally turned off our screens and I looked at my phone and looked at Twitter. And I probably end up, same as you guys, following a lot of people who ended up getting in invites, the kind of the Tesla media who were invited to this event. Sorry, invited at random. But the kind of those people that are making all that kind of content about the company were posting pictures being like, here's the Quad and here's the Roadster, here's the Semi. Yeah. And I was like, that wasn't even a cutaway shot. The only cutaway shot of the production team, which was pretty terrible, Tesla. Maybe try better next time, because the sound was awful and the camera was shaky and it was poor. Maybe they just did it themselves and was like, who can hold a camera? But the production values of that show were just nowhere near a Tesla product launch. And so everything that they had the trademark for, which is whipping people up into a frenzy of excitement and then really delivering on that, being able to explain something very difficult in a very easy way, like, we're going to conquer the truck market. Here it is. Looks crazy, but this is how we'll do it. And everyone understands. They did, that's their trademark, and they just didn't do it. And so, but there wasn't even a cutaway of the vehicles. So I was looking at the social media afterwards, and the stage was flanked by vehicles. Right. And it was flanked by cars lined up in sexy cars. So it was S3, right. X, Y, and then what, you know, and then the rest, right? And then it's, and you think, they so weren't focused on that side of it. I genuinely thought they were going to be like, at the end of the presentation, and all of these vehicles you see here, like all of these seven vehicles, all have them inside right now. And there was none of that. Right. There was none of that, that sort of, that P.T. Barnum show stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, I liked it. It was nerdy and geeky, but I understand why people were let down by it.
Well, I'd like to comment on that. We were talking to this effect during the live stream, like, you know, commenting that it was a little disappointing. And somebody posted in our live comments, guys, it's battery day, like really big. So that's my answer to that. While I wholeheartedly agree with Martin, it would have been much more entertaining. It would have generated a lot more interest and excitement if, you know, he rolled out a Roadster, or you know, even had video of a Roadster driving and semis rolling down the highway. This was battery day. They were there to talk about batteries. They talked about batteries, real technical, geeky. They got into the weeds with battery technology. Maybe I'm just a boring guy. I liked it. I like to hear what they're talking about with, you know, the these new cells and how they're even going to be trying to source new materials or breaking new ground. So I almost think it would have been kind of fake if they did all that. And then, like, from the last 5 minutes, they're like, here's what we have. You know, look at the cars. And, like, all that would have done was, yay. And then, geez, keep hitting my arm. Yay. And maybe push the stock up. I don't know. I don't own Tesla stocks. I really don't care what their stock price is. But we, you know, we got what we were sold. This was battery day. This wasn't Tesla day to lay out our path for the next decade. This was battery day, and we got battery. So I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine. I wish we had, as Martin and Kyle both talked about, some more information on the charging of these new cells. That was the part that was missing. We should have heard, Model 3 and Y can accept up to 250 kilowatt. Now these new cells can take 350 kilowatt, or something that we could wrap our hand around and say, okay, they're better in just every way. What if they're better in all these ways, but they can only take 200 kilowatts, which I doubt is the case, but I'm just saying, If they were marketably better in higher charging rates, I would think that they would have dropped that. The fact that they didn't makes me think maybe there's nothing special about the charge rate on these new cells, but we'll see.
Yeah, this is lots of questions. One other question is about the whole that kind of underpins the feasibility of this whole project is the lithium supply in Nevada. They say they have like 10,000 acres under contract to extract lithium from these clays, and using an acid-free saline extraction, so basically NaCl, sodium chloride, or table salt. But that's something that no one's done before. And they say there's enough lithium in Nevada to supply, the country, the whole United States worth of electric vehicles, which is like a lot of lithium. But yeah, it's like there's like battery supply specialists, just a little doubtful about the feasibility of that whole, it kind of underpins this whole project, in a way, like lithium supply, because they want to produce like a ton of batteries over the next 10 years. Let's talk about the Plaid Model S for a little bit. Well, actually, to start, did anyone want to say anything about the $25,000 vehicle? They announced it would be out in like 3 years.
It's 3 years away. We'll see if they ever do
right. I expect. I was myself a little disappointed that it's $25,000 car and not a $20,000 car. I know for me.
I always have a tough time with this because think about how cheap used Model 3s already are, and then how cheap they're going to be, and just they'll be 10 grand in a couple of years. I don't know. I guess the warranty and the cost replacement, but the cars don't really break. I mean, we've seen some high mileage Model 3s at this point. I'd say it's low risk. Even if you find one with 200,000 miles on it, that has a long way to go. And you'll probably buy one for 10, 15 grand if Model S is any indication, because they're already in the teens for used Model S with 85 kilowatt hour packs. But yeah, if you want a new car for 25 grand, then sure.
With electrification, there's going to be a lot of people buying electric cars over the next 10 years. And I think the used market will stay pretty tight. And so I think, you know, an affordable mass market vehicle should do pretty well, even if it's, you know, even if there's used Model 3s in that same kind of range. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, but let's talk Plaid for a second. So this was kind of like the big product announcement. A Plaid Model S looks the same, but they showed it. They say it has 520 miles of range, 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds, a sub 8 second quarter mile, which is just nuts. And all of this for like $139,000. Kyle, is this impossible?
No, I mean, it seems reasonable. It's certainly a lot less. I always use this. 2 years ago, 2017, I think Model S was most expensive. You could sticker one up to $165,000 or more for a P100D. This is significantly less and has significantly better specs than that car. I think it's very well priced. It's extremely competitive given someone cross shopping an M5, an Audi RS7, whatever else they're going to be looking at. And it's just going to blow away everyone. And this is what we needed. The thing here that I'm slightly disappointed in is we didn't get any geeky stuff of how this car is put together. And I think it's truly because they just don't know. All they did was take the same exact looking Model S. They put some big numbers on there to, you know, blow Lucid away, and then call it a day. Like I said, this is not a thing. People are already like, I bought a Plaid Model S. No, you put a reservation for something that you won't know what it looks like in a year from now. So I hope to see over this next year a much more of a focus on performance. Those Plaid cars we saw going around in the Nürburgring had those fender lips, had real nice meaty tires, had carbon ceramic brakes, had a whole bunch of stuff that would make this tangibly better than just another fast Model S. So, you know, it's basically a P100D that they turned up a little bit that was already faster than most people needed. So it's not that exciting, I think. I think what Lucid's doing is really exciting because it's new and they told us about the technology and they went in depth on how it's put together. This is truly what it comes down to. Just some intern put some numbers on a screen and said, yeah, you can order it and we'll figure it out later.
Well, it has to have the tri-motor. That part has to be in place in order to get like a sub 8 second quarter mile. I mean, it has to have
at least... I don't actually think you need those three motors to get less than the quarter mile time. You can do it with two and on a different car, but we know for sure this one has the tri-motor setup. It will likely have torque vectoring in the rear. You know, we're seeing quarter mile time of less than 9 seconds, 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds, range over 520 miles. Nothing is, we have tested, we know, and that in-car footage of it driving around Laguna Seca, that's cool. But that's not the production car. I don't know. I hate to be such a downer on this because I love to see performance-related EVs, but I really wish there was something tangible in any of this this Plaid stuff. And right, I know it's going to come, and I'm going to be so hyped about it when it does and when we get it out on track and drifting around. I just don't know. I don't want to basically get myself hyped up for the next year waiting for this thing because we don't even know what it's going to be like.
Right. And even though it has these like great numbers, I mean, it looks the same and it looks like we'll have the same interior, which, you know, it's fine, but man, people like new things, you know, when you're talking about this kind of money. And so they have a choice between this or paying a bit more and getting the Lucid Air. And now we've seen the Lucid Air tri-motor performance do its quarter mile the other day. And it's not as good as, it's not as fast as what they claim the Plaid does. It didn't show us the Plaid doing under 9 seconds, but the Lucid Air did like a 9.2 something seconds. It's on the inside of these. You can see the video. Which is great, and plus, but and you also get all the you know, nice new interior, a very luxurious feeling vehicle. Tom, what do you think about that comparison?
Well, you know, on the Plaid, don't forget, Tesla's been talking about this for like a year and a half now, yeah. And now it's still a year away, and it's just a modification of an existing car. It's not like, you know, a totally new car. I was over in Germany this week or last week of last year, sometime in the middle towards the end of September, driving the Taycan from Copenhagen to Hamburg, Germany.
That's right. We were in Germany at the same time.
Right. For the Frankfurt Motor Show. Then I came back the following week to do the Taycan press drive. And that's when Tesla, because the Taycan was doing their media test drive, Tesla shipped the Plaid car over Nuremberg, and, you know, as it famously broke down. And I remember we were having dinner with all the media that night, as after the day of driving the cars, everybody gets together and has dinner and just talks about the cars. Everybody had their cell phones out showing the video of the Tesla being towed away, you know, as we just finished up driving 500 miles in a Taycan. That everybody got quite a bit of a laugh out of that. You know, many of the entrenched automotive journalists aren't huge fans of Tesla. They're fans of the company. I mean, the cars, but not necessarily the company, because we get very little from them. Like, they never organize test drives. It's very hard to get any information out of the company. So, you know, sitting down at dinner with a whole bunch of automotive journalists, they were all giddy over the fact that the Model S broke down and had to be towed away. Anyway, I digress. So that was, you know, that was a year ago when it was being track tested. And now it's another year before you're getting it. So, you know, I don't know why it's taking so long, you know, and then you're talking about Tesla saying a $25,000 car in 3 years, but yet it took them 2.5 years to modify an existing car to make it a little quicker. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going on with the Plaid program. I'm really disappointed that we didn't hear, you know, you can order it now and you'll be getting deliveries by the end of this year, you know, by the end of next year. So that's obviously way on the back burner for Tesla. It's not something that they're really putting a tremendous amount of effort and money into engineering, or the car'd be here already.
Right. I feel like the lost my train of thought. But I think I feel like the battery cell design and all everything surrounding that, you know, just a new production method, a new cell, a new production method. I think it's taken a lot more time and focus than they had really anticipated. I think they've changed maybe the strategy behind the Plaid battery, you know. But it's actually pretty amazing that they, if you watch the video, you can see all the machinery they developed themselves to make this new cell inside this factory. Like, it's pretty amazing to watch, because there's a tabless design. So before, when they were making the cells, you know, the machines that are winding all the anode, the cathode, on everything onto the spools, they had to stop and start, stop, start, start. But now with no tab, everything's in constant motion. There's no stopping of that machinery. And, you know, there's some clips of it working in the video there. And it's, you know, pretty intense, the thing they've kind of had to dream that up and create it over the last couple of years.
I thought what was interesting as well about that, it was around that time, or maybe it was in the investor bit, the first chunk. But anyway, it was around the Gigafactory production that they mentioned, that new machinery, which has been, I think it was a South Korean company made those machines for them. That machinery has been shipped to the pilot line, which on their revision 4. And then I think Drew said that by the time they get to about revision 6, they'll be ready for those machines to be shipped to Giga Shanghai, Berlin, and then Austin when it's made. That's before they build their own factory somewhere in North America. And so then you think, well, Berlin isn't built yet, and we know they're going to be making cells in Berlin. That's going to be finished next summer. Are the first cells they build in Berlin going to be these ones?
It has to be.
But it would make sense. And then you think, well, the first cars coming out of Berlin next summer are the Model Y. So if the first cells they're building in, if they're going to ship these new Revision 6 machines to Berlin, and they're going to make cells in Berlin, and the first cars next summer from Berlin are the Model Y, and Elon has said a few times, look, the car's going to look the same from the outside, right, but that Model Y is going to be an entirely different car. Was he talking about the cells? Because that's not the time frame that he, you know, a Model Y shipping out of Germany next summer is not, we'll finish the pilot line. So there's so many bits that still need to be joined up. Maybe I'm just full of conspiracy theories today, but I do think it's going to happen quicker than Elon was really letting on to his battery making competitors. And who would have thought only a couple of years ago that Tesla's typical competitors that we thought were the other car companies, maybe a few solar companies, were actually Panasonic, LG Chem, CATL. They are the new competition to Tesla, as well as all the car companies. It's amazing, really.
I think at the end of the quarter, so probably like a month from now, we'll get this information out during the call with investors, where people can ask a lot more questions and kind of nail down what these production targets and what technology is going to be in these vehicles and what the timing of it all. You know, hopefully all gets nailed down. But we should move along, unless anyone's got anything else they want to mention about this. No, okay. So the other big news this week is also huge. The day after Battery Day, Volkswagen officially launched the ID.4, an all-electric crossover with 250 miles of range. It looks pretty smart design-wise and costs initially $39,995, so $40,000. That's before the $7,500 federal tax credit and local incentives, depending on what state you're in. And this will be available in all 50 states. You could pay less than $30,000. That's the rear-wheel drive version, but still. Kyle, what do you think? Is this a Hyundai Kona killer?
Oh, this is almost an everything killer. Actually, no, I think Volkswagen has nailed it here. First off, the design, super happy, looks premium. It's true Volkswagen fun again. They're going back to the days when they had those great commercials of Unpimp the Auto and everything. They're going back to their fun roots. They're putting the retro logo on the front of it now. They have the play and pause buttons on the pedals. I think it's great. Price point wise, can you beat this thing? So you're getting an 82 kilowatt hour battery pack, roughly 250 miles EPA range, and it's going to be $39,900 before the federal tax credit. And then in states like Tom in New Jersey, he gets an extra $5,000 off. And oh, by the way, no sales tax. So like, how can you afford not to buy one of these things if you're an Uber, if you drive around a lot? And the kicker here is 3 years of free unlimited charging on Electrify America. Now that adds up. I did a calculation. If you drive 15,000 miles per year on Electrify America charging, it saves you roughly $6,000 over your 3 year period. So now all you got to do is just stop in at one of those stations, take the free juice. Why not? Of course you'll charge at home for the most part, but, this is adding up to be an incredible value. I would say the best value in the entire electric space. I would say it's better than Model Y, of course, which is like $12,000 or $15,000 more than this car. And the Model Y makes sense if you're going on a ton of trips and you like the Tesla infrastructure with the supercharger network. But this has great ADAS. I think they nailed it here. This is great. And I think we'll see a way huge construction constraint on this car. They will eventually be built in 5 plants around the world, 2 in Europe, 2 in China, 1 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, right here. And that car that's being built in Tennessee will optionally have a 55 or 62 kilowatt hour battery pack. They're not sure what they're going to put in it yet, but it'll be $35,000 before tax credit, before state incentives. They got it. What do you guys think? I'm curious.
I would just, you know, the 82 kilowatt hour pack size, that's gross. It's 77
net. 77 usable.
So, yeah. Yes, so that is a 5 kilowatt hour buffer. So they're not going to be telling their customers, like Tesla customers, oh, don't charge it too high just in case. This is a car for the masses. Charge it to 100%. It's fine. We got you, because they'll be looking after the battery pack safety at the top and the bottom. People will run this down to 1 or 2 miles left and then forget to charge it for a couple of days. And it's not going to kill the battery. So there's a good size buffer on this, but I don't believe the range. I don't believe it at all.
So you don't think it's going to get too
low? It's too low. It's too low.
Okay, hold on.
77 kilowatt hour pack on a car that looks pretty slippery, not that big. It's smaller. Remember, it's smaller than the Y. By quite a distance, it's smaller than the Y,
yeah,
dimensionally. Even if you got 3.5 miles per kilowatt hour, which is pretty conservative, that's still 269.5 miles. So say 270 miles. Now, the WLTP range of this is 323. And although there's a delta, there's an offset between WLTP and EPA. I think EPA is more accurate, by the way. Why in here in Europe do we rate it as 323? And yet the number they gave on the US presentation was 250? Right. They're lowballing.
I can share.
Go on.
Okay. I've been driving an Audi e-tron, which is made by Volkswagen Audi Group, which gets 2.3 miles per kilowatt hour. Volkswagen Group has a unique skill of making cars especially inefficient.
Well done, then.
But no, I think they're really actually, I think just like Taycan, this car will suffer the same fate. We're on the highway. Taycan's rated at 199 miles US for a Turbo S, but you can get 260, 270 miles out of it on the highway. And it's all about how they're run through the EPA testing. And Jason Fenske in Engineering Explained has a great video that goes through each of these things. And basically, Volkswagen Group doesn't really, it traditionally, pay to have the EPA go through more of these stringent tests. Therefore, that Model S and Lucid are optimized for all of those tests. This car, I agree with you, Martin, will go farther than its 250 miles predicted range with that battery pack size. However, I think it is smart to rate it at 250. It is, again, EPA giving the rating, not Volkswagen. It's an independent rating. But that's why they're probably being conservative, because they've seen such a huge hit with Taycan. But real world will go farther.
LG Chem pouch cells in this coming from Germany, but then when the Chattanooga plant spins up, there'll be SK Innovation cells. So the actual technology in it, you know, both of those are best in the business cell makers, and so that side of it's all fine. Charging speed's 125 kilowatts.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
That seems all right. That's all right, isn't it? Like, not for super Tesla nerds that want every last bit of peak power, but you don't really care, you know, if you're buying an ID4, 125 is good enough, right?
Yeah, and it'll probably hold it deep into the pack if we have Taycan and e-tron base upon. So I think that's fine.
Yeah, how long it holds the charging rate is something that many people, we talk about it frequently here, many people don't really understand. I think this is going to charge just fine, and based on the Volkswagen Group's charging curves on their other vehicles. And, you know, one of the things, I got a chance to talk to a few of the Volkswagen representatives about this. The interesting thing is they made it a point to say that they weren't really matching their, say, the specs against a Model Y or a Mach-E. They didn't go after the 0 to 60 times in under 5 seconds, which so many people are doing. They see this as a Toyota RAV4 Honda CR-V killer. This is what those are the vehicles that they're putting this up against. They flat out come out and say, we're not trying to cannibalize Tesla and Mustang Mach-E. Hyundai Kona, fine. Let them sell all the vehicles they want. This is an ICE killer, and that's what we made it for. You know, it's only 201 horsepower, the rear-wheel drive version. It's going to go 0 to 60. While they didn't release the figures in 7.8, maybe 8 seconds, somewhere around there, it's not going to be really quicker than that, which is more than fast enough for the RAV4 Honda CR-V people. Volkswagen sees this vehicle, the ID4, as their Model T of the 21st century. And they've literally came out and said that. As Kyle said, made in 5 factories around the world. This is their ID brand's mass selling vehicle that they literally want to sell millions of. And I think they did a really good job with it. And with this price point, the different trim levels that they have, especially Kyle mentioned in 2022, when Chattanooga, Tennessee comes online here in the US, this is going to be available, albeit with a smaller battery pack, for $35,000. And as Kyle also mentioned, here in New Jersey, you get the federal tax credit, $5,000 cash on the hood, zero sales tax. This is like a $22,000 car out the door in New Jersey. How does that not just beat the hell out of the ICE competition? The Volkswagen
and
nailed
free
it
charging
and free years. And free charging. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like but one of the things we haven't talked about, an interesting feature on this car, is it has rear drum brakes. Like when's the last time we talked about drum brakes? Never, you know. But and Volkswagen explained it, you know, that it's not just a cash deal, like, oh, they'll save $10 a car. There is savings on that, but it's not simply that simple. What they said was that the drum brakes actually have lower rolling resistance than the disc brakes, and that the fact that they hold up better over long periods of non-use, like many.
True.
So, you know, you got, I mean, it saves money. They're probably better in the long run for longevity. Let's face it, these, especially rear brakes on an EV, don't get used that much. And then, they're gonna perform. They'll make the car more efficient over the lifetime, albeit probably very small increase in efficiency. But there's no reason not to use them. So,
If you want to get real nitty gritty about it too, my smart car has them. I'm actually very pleased with the braking performance on that car. But it will contain the brake dust inside of the housing as well. So smart, it's technically smart. more green for the environment.
I heard that, Kyle, but then don't you have to clean them out eventually?
Yeah. I mean, well, whenever you replace them, you can collect the particles in the bottom of the drum, basically. And then at the service center, they're just going to knock them together like steel drums, and they'll fly into the air at that point.
Oh, great. But have you actually been inside it, Tom? I know you got a special kind of come this way from VW before everybody else. But with COVID and stuff, were you allowed to get inside and touch and experience it? Or was it just a presentation?
I was able to get inside and sit down for a very brief period of time. Didn't learn much. There was a problem with my time slot, which I don't really want to get into. I had the wrong address was sent to me on my invitation, and I was like 2 miles away from where it was being held at in Brooklyn. And everything was so structured time-wise because of COVID. It was like, if you get there 20 minutes late, well, that's, you know, this, nobody's getting pushed back. But I do have some news. I'm going to be able to drive one next week.
Oh, okay. That's going to be interesting. But really quickly, like, so you sat in it, and just like, what was your general impression?
Much more premium feel than the ID3. Very similar to the ID3, like as far as how everything was laid out. It has the BMW i3 gear selector knob on the steering wheel, just like the, that's cool. You could probably zoom in. I don't know if you can, but in any event, it felt very familiar. But nice and comfortable. The material, it wasn't all hard plastic. It's there's a fair amount of plastic, but it didn't feel cheap plasticky. I didn't like the door panels have this white. The armrest is white. That looked a little cheap. I don't know if we have any pictures of that. It kind of made me feel a little Chevy Bolt-ish. There you go there on that last picture. The white on the door panel?
It would probably change depending on trim.
It would, but I've seen it on a couple of different. They're right there. Yeah. It just kind of stood out and looked and felt cheap to me. Other than that, everything else felt really great. It was laid out well. Seats were super comfortable. I loved the display, the driver's display. I definitely think that was a good move for them to do this. Everything seemed well. I'll have a little bit more on it once I get to drive it. But this is Volkswagen's really big numbers play here in the ID line. I think this is going to be a winner for them.
I agree.
Yeah, those white, it's weird, those white armrests. They're black in the back seat.
And also, I know white steering wheels are just generally, even you can clean leather. And there's no non-animal version of this, by the way, which I don't know if anybody cares about that. But the leather bits, anyway, you can clean. But still, White steering wheels, generally a bad idea.
Martin, I have some info on that.
Oh, go on.
On your leather-wrapped steering wheel for animal freeness.
Go on.
If you don't get driver assistance, you can get an animal-free steering wheel. Only if you get driver assistance do you need the leather for capacitive touch, but their engineers are working on a solution to provide animal-free solutions for the capacitive touch sensor.
Isn't that interesting?
Look at that. And this is just a small thing, but I really like that mood lighting. You can see that it's like a blue line going alongside the dash.
That changes. That changes, right?
Right.
It's a choice of like 16 million colors or something ridiculous.
Yeah. There's also a light. You can't see it in this picture where the windshield meets the dashboard along the top. There's a long LED strip that changes like when you put it in drive, and I wasn't really able to use it there, and I couldn't really get clarity on how that's not going to be distracting because it's really up in your line of vision, but they promise it's not. Hopefully when I get a chance to drive it, I'll get a little sense of how that works and what I don't even really know what functions it provides. It has something to do with navigation. It might even, if you change lanes, it might light up in the corner of the direction you're going in, but I have to get more information on that.
So this is supposed to be on sale. This is going to be available to buyers like this year. By the end of the year, it's going to be in dealerships, right?
Yeah. And that's the first edition, which is sold out in eight hours. $43,995. Then the regular version is $40,000. And then there's going to be an all-wheel drive version with 302 horsepower coming out next year. That's, I think, 43 or 44,000. Then eventually in 2022, we've got the vehicle coming from Chattanooga, and that's going to be the $35,000 version.
Well, I'm hoping that extra 100 horsepower and all-wheel drive will give it a decent 0 to 60 time. I'd like to see a version of it capable of doing like five. I think 5 seconds is a really super quick amount, but not, you know, but not without going like overboard, you know, because it's not a sports car. It's like a, you know.
Yeah, actually, I would I would comment on this since I've been driving a Volkswagen Group SUV in the e-tron. I think I've floored it twice on the street. Right. I just cruise around. Yeah. It's so comfortable. But and that car's like 6-point-something seconds 0-60. It's not fast. But when you juice it, when you put your foot into it and sport with the boost, it goes fine. But I would say Volkswagen's taking the right approach, not chasing 0-60 times and just chasing adequate power. And on paper, it'll be faster than their ICE equivalent.
I agree 100%. I disagree with you on this one, Dom. I do not believe we need a 5-second ID4, period. 6.5, 7.5 for the base versions is more. This is a family hauler. This isn't let's take it on Kyle's track and you know, which is fun, you know, and pound it. This is meant for the masses, and you know, most of the people I can imagine that would be driving this, families with kids, they really have no need for something that goes under 5 seconds 0-60. Period.
Right. I just know, you know, like guys, anyway, I think women actually make most of the buying decision when it comes to vehicles and families, but I know guys love good acceleration and that will sell them on a test drive, you know?
Yeah,
that's a really good point. The test drive, does come with acceleration. It is a good point.
But 6.5 seconds, 0-60 is
that's plenty, really,
me. So, you know, honestly, I don't think they should chase that. Leave that to Tesla. Leave that to Mustang Mach-E. I love the fact that Volkswagen, it went so much out of the way to say, look, they can sell as many cars as they want. We're happy for them. We're going after the RAV4 and the CR-V, which sells tons here in the U.S. and Europe also. That's the market we want. And we put our vehicle up against it in every metric. This is a better vehicle.
Let me be slightly devil's advocate here. After we've all had effusive praise for this car, the first edition has sold out in the US. But I mean, if you only have a couple on sale, you can sell out pretty quickly. How do you feel about the production numbers coming from Germany? The US plant won't be open for 2 more years. I'm just worried that this is going to be another EV that if they made them available to US buyers in numbers would be a mega hit. They'll be bought on lease and that they gave the lease price as $379 with $3,000 down, 10,000 miles. Like this is going to be, it would wipe the floor with so many ICE cars if they made enough, right?
That's a really good point, because they're only starting with one factory for the world. They will be very much production constrained going forward. How do you stop the dealers from jacking up the prices on them, putting, you know, 10,000 over MSRP sticker stuff? I don't know the answer to that. They, Volkswagen legally cannot tell a dealer what final sale contractually to the owner of the vehicle is. That's part of our dealer franchise laws here. So we'll probably see dealers jacking prices up on these. However, we'll see them on the roads in smaller numbers. But I think given a two-year rollout, just like Model 3 took a while for them to come up, but of course Tesla doesn't put 10 over MSRP since they're selling the cars in stock or from manufacturer. I think that it's not like this is a limited production. It's just, it's going to take a while to get them out, and that's fine. So I don't think it'll be a huge deal. I think we'll just wait a little bit longer, a year or two, and we'll see a ton of them around, and they'll all be 25 grand or whatever people buy them for after tax credit. It'll be great. But I think it's a great opportunity to buy one as soon as you can. You could probably drive it for 6 months and sell it for what you paid for it. I really think that the used market's going to be so strong just because of the demand for this car.
Well, I think the used market's going to be strong for quite a while. What was that, Tom? Sorry.
No, yeah, I was going to say, I totally agree with Martin. Kyle, I think it's launching in two plants from the beginning, right? Zweikow and also in China. Yes, it's going to be built in two plants right from the beginning. So, and the fact that they've announced this is going to be built in five plants gives you hope that while initially the first year, I'm sure it's going to be supply constrained, it's not, that wasn't built into this whole vehicle like we've seen manufacturers do with their other vehicles, where right from day one, you knew they were never going to have as many of these as they could possibly sell. I think Volkswagen understands that there's going to be a tremendous a demand for this car. So they're putting it in five factories. They can't do that overnight. So I'm going to cut them a little slack on that. Will it be gouged in the beginning? Probably, but that'll subside. And hopefully, once the factories all come online, they'll be able to make them in crazy numbers.
Well, dealers can't raise the price up too much because people will just do that Tesla stretch and pay the, you know, the 40 grand and get all wheel drive and a Tesla and, you know,
Go get a Y
or a Mach-E.
Yeah. Or a Mach-E.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Yeah. It's also coming. So I was just saying that the used market for electric vehicles, I think, is going to stay super strong and resale values will hold really well for a while because electrification is definitely happening. So the big news out of California this week is that they're considering banning gas cars and gas powered off-road vehicles by 2035, which, you know, is putting a clock on things. Big news. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, huge news. We were talking about this little pre-show and Tom made a really good point. There's always a future governor that could walk back on this. However, it shows a clear step that California is going to be the most stringent in terms of EV demand and forcing automakers to build electric cars than almost any other country. Keep in mind, California, just Southern California, sells more cars than all of Canada. So you have an incredibly large market in this one state that should be considered its own entire market. And they have a huge influence as to what cars we actually get. You see manufacturers building cars just for the California market, Toyota Mirai being one of them in the US. And so, I think this is huge news. I thought it was a little interesting that Ford was saying that they were like the only US automaker that's being so green. I was like, what Tesla? And so, I don't know. I guess they view them as a tech company. Doesn't really matter. What really matters here is that the gas-powered vehicles are going to be banned by 2035, at least according to this executive order.
Right. It's a big deal. I guess you have a similar thing going on over there in the UK, Martin?
Yeah, we've had a weird thing happen here that we said 2040, then it became 2035, and then somebody went on a radio talk show from the government months ago now, one of those breakfast kind of slightly highbrow public service phone-in programs. And the government spokesman said, well, we could do 2030. And the auto industry absolutely lost it because there is an association. It's effectively a lobby body, but effectively all the car makers pay their subs fee. And okay. then this one body in the UK represents them. And so they call themselves, you know, they are the voice of the motor industry. And they came out and they were like, this is absolutely unthinkable, can't be done. Of course, there is one big manufacturer that doesn't pay to be part of this body, beginning with T, because they don't like to be part of any club that they could be in. But all the other car makers are part of it. And so they were like, you absolutely can't do this. They lobbied really, really hard. The government said, okay, we'll listen to you. We'll take it all into consideration. They came out this week and went, no, actually, we think 2030 is a really good idea. So that would be any car with a combustion engine in.
There's plug-in
hybrid as well. Isn't that unthinkable? I mean, it won't happen because it's 9 years away. But, you know, the government are suffering very, very much with their response to COVID. The polls are in the negative side to what they've ever been in terms of approval. And so whether they mean this or not, I think they will look for policies that have very high public approval to try and get back on the good side of voters. And this is exactly one of those things that apart from the car industry, who's going to complain? We're going to make the air cleaner from 2030. So they're talking about that being an announcement. It was going to be this week, but then we've had COVID kick off and they had to do a special sort of reaction to that. And we've sort of locked semi-lockdown again. But they say before the end of the year, they'll actually publish that as we're going to pass this through law. 2030 will be the last time you can sell a car with an engine in. And they're talking about 15 to 18 years being the life cycle of those last cars sold. Right. So they've got an eye on 2050. Which, you know, when you put it like that, that fleet, that stock of cars finally going to be scrapped, it's probably about right, you know?
Well, there's a thread on the Inside EVs forum that has a lot of these different areas, because it's not just California thinking it, and there's a whole pile of like municipalities and countries and provinces and, you know, that are considering this like ICE ban. And so I think with California announcing this, I think it puts a lot of pressure on OEMs to like, it just kind of makes things really more clear, you know, the time frame that this all has to happen. I think Jalopnik had an article out yesterday, like an opinion piece saying that they should just do it like right away, just ban them all right away. But, you know, as much as I like the idea of electrification, I don't see how that's even feasible with the charging infrastructure we have. That would just like be chaos, and you know California doesn't need more chaos.
But I think if you circle round to where we started on the podcast over an hour ago, the Tesla battery day will impact the others. So Tesla aren't going to be carrying the battery responsibility for powering the world on their own shoulders. But what they have done is the boardrooms of all those, and whether they knew what Tesla was working on or not, the next day they changed the game for everyone. And so by 2030, can we be powering long distance heavy hauling vehicles? Maybe we can if it causes the rate of development of all their competitors to step up again.
Well, batteries are improving. I spoke actually to somebody at GM, a high level executive, recently, and we were talking about the 400 watt hour per kilogram mark that I think Tesla will be approaching. It's like two or three years, I think they said. And so I threw that out there. So does GM and LG, are they looking at 400 watt hours per kilogram as well? And if so, can you reach that in 5 years? And it was like less. So. Wow. Yeah, so it's not just Tesla that's, you know, chasing down, you know, huge gains in battery energy density, which will drive down prices. You know, the big boys are on this as well. At least some of them, maybe not all of them, but at least some of them are, right? So we're really low on time, so we want to hit a couple of things really quickly. So Lincoln, I want to touch on this because it's kind of important. There's a company called Lincoln & Co. It's a Chinese automaker. It's part of the Geely Group, and they're about to debut its Zero concept all-electric crossover at the Beijing Motor Show. Most listeners may not be familiar with this automaker, but it's owned by Geely, which makes this more interesting than it already is, because Geely is a gigantic Chinese company that also owns Volvo, Polestar, Lotus, Proton, which is a Malaysian, I believe, automaker, the London Electric Vehicle Company, which does the London taxis, and Wancheng, which is a commercial vehicle, like a truck maker in China. They have a lot of other businesses well outside of the automaking. But this is interesting because the Lincoln Co. Concepts uses the Sustainable Experience Architecture, or C. This is a basic platform, and it will be shared by all these other brands and even be offered to non-Geely brands, much like Volkswagen is doing with its MEB platform, using it for a number of in-house brands and also licensing it out to Ford and others. So this platform can be fitted with a single, double, or triple motors and even a range extender. We can get an idea about the abilities of this platform by looking at specs offered up by the concept. It's got a 435-mile range, but that's ADC, so just consider a lot less than that. Let's say 300 miles or so. 4 seconds, 0 to 60, which is nice. Tom, what do you think of this concept real quick, and how long do you think before Lincoln Co. comes to America?
So, you know, it is, as you mentioned, it's a Geely brand, Lincoln Co. It's their all electric brand. They do make plug-in hybrids, but all the vehicles are electric. And what you said, the SEA, the Sustainable Experience Architecture, is the big story about, even bigger than this car, in my opinion. That is going to be the MEB of China. It is going to be used in so many different vehicles and licensed to other manufacturers to use. That's that seems to be the diamond in this car. That said, it looks like a great SUV. Really beautiful. Specs are fantastic. This is going to give Model Y some serious competition in China, and NIO. So, you know, there's another one. And I tell you, these Chinese manufacturers, you know, I've done a lot with XPeng. I've driven their cars. They're becoming world-class cars. This isn't just, you know, oh, China's going to be China. No, this is going to be a global brand. This is coming to Europe. This at some point will probably come to America, Lincoln Company. I mean, you know, the time of Chinese cars being stuck in China because they're lower quality is over. With electrification, China is leapfrogging ICE, and they're bringing world class vehicles to the stage, and they're going to compete in the U.S. and Europe. And watch out, because this is for real. They're just one after another keeps launching. And now look, we saw in other news, XPeng just shipped their first 100 G3 SUVs, compact SUVs, to Norway. They just loaded them on the ship yesterday. So now the XPeng invasion has begun. This is serious. And, you know, we're going to be in 4 or 5 years, I think we're going to look around and say, how'd this happen? But it's going to happen.
Right. I like this Lincoln Co. car. I like the design language on all their stuff. You know, I think it's spot on. And this kind of looks like a bit of a squashed I-Pace, actually, on the side profile. But I like the headlights a lot. Kyle, I want to say anything really quick about this.
I just love Geely as a company. I think they're doing everything great, taking electrification really seriously, buying up existing automakers like Lotus, like Volvo, giving them free rein from the design language, supporting them with the money for the technology on the back end. Design language on this car doesn't do it for me, but I agree with Tom in saying that Geely loves modular architectures, so that you can take a system architecture or chassis, stretch it, move it however you want, and then build cars off of it. I agree with Tom saying this will be the MEB of China. So pretty cool.
Okay. I just got a couple of items I want to mention real quick before I close out. Interrupt me if anyone wants to say anything about it. So Nikola Motors, Trevor Milton is gone, the founder and the chairman, ex-CEO, and now ex-chairman of the board. He is out of there. The stock price has sunk from its $50 high of like a couple of weeks ago, or last week, when they announced their partnership with GM. And, you know, that yesterday at close, it was like $19.10. So, you know, and some are saying it's going to go to zero. He's being replaced by Stephen Gursky, who is from GM originally and a GM executive. But man, it's not looking good over there. So it's something to keep your eye on. There's some, yeah, drop by the Inside EVs forum. We have a Nikola section, and you know, we could talk about that there. So also Daimler, Mercedes, They have a, they're saying the Mercedes-Benz E-Actros long haul semi truck is going to be ready in 2024 with a 311 mile range, which, you know, I feel like it's, you know, I kind of like the look of it. It looks pretty sweet, but it just seems like it's, you know, too little too late. But, you know, 2024, we'll see how that matches up. That's like a lot. That's 200 miles fewer than the Tesla Semi. I don't know. I think and this Daimler also, they also own Freightliner and Fuso and other brands, and they want to use this drivetrain or this powertrain in those other vehicles as well. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if they're looking at the right target. Anyway, and other also with sticking with Mercedes, the subcompact crossover that is designed on and based on the gas powered GLA, the EQA, has been delayed until 2021. See, UK deliveries are now going to start in the second half of 2021. So it's at least 6 to 9 months behind the original plans. It's supposed to be coming single motor front wheel drive and also a dual motor four wheel drive version and possibly an AMG version down the road. Martin, you want to say anything about that real quick, since that's your part of the world?
Looks like everything got COVID-ed this year, but this one maybe a little more than others. Shame, really, but I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing more than the what was, you know, simply the EQC, which is all we've really seen from Mercedes-Benz. Quick, luxurious, expensive, right. But we want to see more.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. But actually, Kyle, we want to take some questions from our regular watchers and listeners and things. We have we're setting something up for that.
Yeah, so I think on shows going forward, we're going to bake into the end of the show when people are done with news. We're just going to answer a few questions. And I did a little trial of this without asking anyone. I didn't realize we'd go on so long. So I'll just, I'm just going to go through really quick because a lot of these we've already talked about. But I have a question for you, Dominic. If you were to buy an SUV in 2021 or CUV, would you buy the ID4 or the Model Y?
ID4 is more in my price range. I can't even think about buying a Model Y.
But So, ID4.
Yep.
Are there any three-row battery electric crossovers coming out under 50K? No. Let's see. Any predictions on when we will see adjustments to charging curves on the existing Tesla fleet?
Tom? Putting you on the spot.
Tom's off. Muted.
You're muted.
He's got himself muted there.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. No, we haven't heard anything about that. I'm sure it could be in the works with Tesla. All of a sudden they announce something. But no, unfortunately, we don't have any news on when or if that's going to happen.
And one last question that I think is really important, which is from a new podcast called Grid Connections, which I was on recently. Let me read it real quick. If charging networks did one thing to improve the charging experience, what would you like to see?
Yep.
Plug and charge.
No touch, nothing. Just plug in and everything takes care of everything. Plug and charge.
So mine is just more stations because four right. is not going to be enough.
That's true. That's it. Are we good?
Cool. I think that's it. Yeah, we answered. We had a whole bunch, but we got through most of it in the show, and I don't want to take up too much more time.
No problem. All right. So don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec, and I'm Dominic Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all next week. Ciao.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.